Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. The last time Tom Perez worked for the state of Maryland, he was secretary of what was known as DOLLR, the State Department of Labor Licensing and Regulation. Well, since then, he's been chair of the Democratic National Committee and U.S. Secretary of Labor, among other things. Well, can he now transition to Maryland's governor's office? Secretary Tom Perez joins us now in the Candidates Corner. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. And don't forget, you can hear all of the Candidates Corner interviews on our website, WHUR.com. Secretary Perez, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
It's so good to be with you and your listeners, Harold, and please call me Tom. It's a lot quicker.
All right, sir. I will do that. Let us talk about those who don't know you as Tom Perez, Secretary Perez, or any of the other titles that you've held. I know who you are, but some of our listeners do not. So kind of give us the short bio of who you are.
Sure. Well, Harold, my family came to this country from the Dominican Republic. They got kicked out because there was a brutal dictator, and my family spoke out against them. That's how we came to this country. My father was a legal immigrant who was drafted in the U.S. Army and served with pride in the Army after he got out. We moved to Buffalo, New York, because he got a job at the VA hospital. He really loved working with service members. And unfortunately, I was 12 years old when my dad passed away, and that was a bad summer. My mother almost died that same summer. And what I learned from that was resilience. And my parents taught my four siblings and me that it's really important to give back. And, you know, I come to you tonight and I come to your listeners tonight with just a remarkable amount of humility. And I just feel so lucky because I never thought that in a million years, you know, a Pell Grant kid who, you know, worked one summer on the back of a trash truck could grow up to serve as a civil rights lawyer in the Justice Department, serve for Senator Kennedy, work in local government, state government, and the federal government, serve as your U.S. Labor Secretary, head of the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department. My whole life has been about jobs and justice and opportunity, and I've really tried to live the values that my parents instilled in us to make sure that the ladder's down for others, make sure that everybody has a fair shake, and that's exactly what my career has been about, whether it was prosecuting police misconduct and racial violence cases as a career prosecutor at the Justice Department, whether it was serving on Capitol Hill with Senator Kennedy doing criminal justice reform and civil rights work, whether it was working as the first Latino on the Montgomery County Council 20 years ago, or serving Martin O'Malley as Maryland's Labor Secretary. All of the jobs I've had, the connective tissue, Harold, has been about making sure people got a fair shake, jobs, justice, and opportunity. And, you know, I was proud to lead the Civil Rights Division under President Obama and then become his labor secretary during his second term. We got a lot done. We took on predatory lenders. We took on voting rights reforms. We took on idiot sheriffs like Joe Arpaio in Maricopa County, Arizona, who was terrorizing the community, and we brought him to justice. And as labor secretary, making sure that people were treated fairly in the workplace, people had access to opportunity. And that's exactly why I'm running for governor, because I want to make sure that zip code never determines destiny in our state. I want to make sure that everybody in every corner of our state can have a good job, can have a wonderful public school education. My wife and I are proud public school parents of three children who went through the Montgomery County public school system. And I want to make sure that everybody's children has the experience that we had. There's a lot of challenges out there, whether it's the pandemic, whether it's healthcare, whether it's the climate crisis, whether it's racial justice. You know, Maryland has the highest incarceration rate of black men in the country. There's so much inequality that we have to deal with. We've got crime challenges. And I'm running for governor so that we can tackle all of these challenges and build a Maryland that truly does work for everyone.
Why, since you've held so many notable positions, many of them on the national stage, why come back to Maryland?
Well, I've been rooted in Maryland the majority of my life, Harold. I've lived here since the late 80s with my wife, who works with people experiencing homelessness. I served in local government, as I mentioned. What I didn't mention was I served on the board of a wonderful organization, CASA of Maryland. I was board chair, and we help immigrants from around the world, not just immigrants from Spanish-speaking countries, but immigrants from around the world get access to opportunity. And I'll tell you, as we look around our world and our country right now, our democracy is on fire. It's a five-alarm blaze. And when I see in the context right now of a Supreme Court that turned the clock backwards 49 years on women's reproductive health, that has been making a mockery of gun safety in the name of liberty, I see the place to make the most difference in people's lives right now, given how broken Washington is in state governments. I want Maryland to be a model for the nation, a model on voting rights, a model on women's reproductive health by having a constitutional amendment to codify Roe v. Wade. I want Maryland to be a model for public education. When I served under Martin O'Malley, Harold, we were number one in public schools in the country. Now we've fallen to 13. I want us to be a clean energy capital of America. And I want us to be an example for every other state of how we build equity across our state, how we can make sure that people truly do get a fair shake. I there's a famous Supreme Court opinion from 1931, Harold, in which Justice Brandeis famously said that states are laboratories of democracy. I'm quite confident he didn't have Texas and Florida circa 2022 in mind, because they're doing horrible things to our democracy down there. But I want Maryland to be that model. And I think we can help so many people in so many different ways as governor. And I am running so that we can get those things done. I'm a proud member of what I call the GSD wing of the Democratic Party. I want to get stuff done. That's been the story of my career. And it's not just any stuff. It's getting things done that meaningfully improve people's lives. That's why I'm running. And I think Maryland is a perfect place for us to demonstrate that the principles of democracy and, frankly, the principles of the Democratic Party can help improve people's lives across the board.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're at the Candidates Corner. We're talking to gubernatorial candidate Tom Perez. He wants to be the next Democratic governor of Maryland. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Lines are open. Let's go to Andre calling from Maryland. Andre, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Andre, are you there? Andre, going once. Are you there? Andre, give us a call if you can. Give us a call back. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You were given an endorsement nod by the Washington Post. How important is that to the politics of this campaign, or do you think it matters?
Well, I think it does matter, and I was honored to have this the endorsement from the Washington Post and actually the Baltimore Sun as well. And then earlier this week, Harold, the Washington Post did something that they don't do very often, which is they issued a second endorsement. And I was surprised and very honored to have that. And what they said, I think the reason they noted that there's a lot of qualified candidates in the field. And I agree with them on that. But what both papers also said is that for them, the choice was clear. And the reason it was clear is that we need, because we're in a moment of not just crisis, Harold, we're in a moment of multiple crises. We've got people who've lost their jobs. We've got people who've lost loved ones to COVID. We've got people who've lost their health care. We've got people who've lost hope. We've got people living in housing conditions that are substandard. We've got an opioid epidemic. We've got people who need broadband and don't have it. And the list goes on. And what I think the Post said and the Baltimore Sun said was that the choice was clear for them because, and I'm just reading from one of the endorsements from the Post, none of the candidates can match my track record or command of governing. The Post went on to say that few candidates in Maryland's history or the country would enter a governor's office so well prepared. And I was humbled by that. And, you know, I do take pride in the fact that I've been able to make a difference in a wide array of areas, whether it's healthcare when I served on the Kaiser Commission on Medicaid and the uninsured, or whether it was when I settled the two largest fair lending cases in the history of the Fair Housing Act. You know, settled two major strikes when I was labor secretary. One involved Verizon, one involved West Coast dock workers. And I'm a former federal prosecutor, and we've got some crime challenges in Maryland. And I really look forward to working very, very closely with all the jurisdictions and bringing the federal government's resources to bear. I spent 14 years or so at the Department of Justice. I know that building, and I want to get more help from our colleagues at DOJ.
Let me go back to the phone lines. Andre, calling from Maryland. Are you there?
Yes.
Go right ahead. What's on your mind?
What program do you have in plan for the youth?
Andre, could you repeat your question?
He said, what programs do you have planned for Maryland youth? Very straightforward, to the point question.
Oh, yeah, great. No, it's a great question, Andre. Thank you very much. You know, we have a blueprint. There's two dimensions to the answer to that question, Andre. And one is Democrats in the Maryland State Senate and House enacted a really, really robust blueprint for Maryland's future. It's a blueprint that whose basic tenet is that we have to invest in our young people from cradle through career, quite frankly. We've underinvested from zero to four. We've got to make sure that we're investing in early childhood. I think your question is probably also relating to, you know, what do we do for teenagers and young adults to make sure they have access to opportunity? And I've put forth a very forward-leaning plan on TomPerez.com to make sure that we're investing in young people. I have, you know, we have some tremendous opportunities, for instance, to grow a clean energy economy. And I've worked with a lot of young people to make sure that they have access to those skills that are going to enable them to get these good middle-class jobs. You know, we look at, you know, I used to do a lot of work in the juvenile justice context. And the challenge that I saw with young people who were in the juvenile justice system is that they didn't have role models. They didn't have mentors. And one thing I want to do is dramatically expand access to what I call experiential learning opportunities. Give them mentors so that they can see what is it like to work in whatever sector might excite them, whether it's in entertainment or whether it's in hospitality or whether it's in healthcare, whether it's in business.
So do you have a program in place now, or are you just saying that you don't have a program in place?
No, well, I'm not the governor right now, so I'm not allowed to. This is what I want to do. And what I would tell you is if you go to my website, TomPerez.com, you will see exactly what we're trying to do for young people, which is make sure you have access to free college if you can't afford it. I was a Pell Grant kid, Andre, and so I know how difficult affordability is. We need to make investments in community assets, such as community centers, so that young people after school have places to go and things to do. I know for me, when I was growing up, I used to go to the YMCA, which was a mile from my house after school. That was a remarkable opportunity for me to do things. So many folks, so many young people right now, you know, they don't have access to those basic things. I go around the state and I hear this all the time. We need a community center. I was in Northeast Baltimore County with Delegate Carl Jackson last weekend, and he said the most important thing we need in our community, and his community is a low income, low, middle to lower income, has a lot of middle to lower income pockets. And what the most important thing that the community told them they need was a community center with programming. And that's exactly what we're doing there. So as your governor, I want to make sure that we are listening to communities, that we're listening to young people, that we are investing in their education. We're investing in their future. We're making sure they have access to broadband. We're making sure I worked when I was labor secretary with a we did a major investments in inner city schools to teach young people how to code, because computer coding can be a ticket to the middle class for so many kids, and you don't need a college degree to be a coder. And it was so exciting to take the so everybody has a lot of kids have a smartphone, and we take that fluency they have on social media with their smartphone, and we turn it into a career in computer coding. I want to make sure they have access to things like that. But I love your question, Andre, and go to my website, and you'll see more things that we've put out there.
Andre, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are in the candidates' corner talking to Tom Perez. We're going to take a quick break, but we are going to talk to Xavier and Ann, both of them calling from Maryland. Lines will continue to be open up until about 8 o'clock. So if you have a comment or a question for Mr. Perez, give us a call again at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. And don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. And don't forget to download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone, and you can hear the program live in its entirety. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back on Sirius XM in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're back at the Candidates Corner with Tom Perez as we discuss his bid for governor in Maryland. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to Ann calling from Maryland. Ann, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call this evening. I was calling with concerns for Tom Perez in regards to mainly Prince George's County public school system. What is his plan to better the public schools in Prince George's County? I live in the county. I actually live in Bowie, but I have to send my kids to private schools, and I just don't think that's acceptable. So what is your plan for mainly Prince George's County public schools?
Let me ask you, Ann, why do you feel you need to send your kids to private school? You said you have to send your kids to private school. Why do you believe you have to?
Because of the standard school ratings and things of that nature for the schools in my area is not acceptable for me in terms of what I want my kids to come up under. So in order for them to get a better education, so I feel from my area, I have to send them to private schools.
I see. Mr. Perez, go right ahead.
Sure. And your question is a question that I hear as frequently as anything. And that's why I go back to what I talked about. One of the most important things the next governor is going to have to do is implement the far-reaching blueprint for Maryland's future. That is education blueprint that was years in the making, that arose out of a commission led by former Maryland Chancellor Britt Kerwin. And here's what we have to do. And here's the next governor is going to have to be the implementer in chief, implementing this blueprint. And it starts with making sure the blueprint is fully funded, because part of the challenge in Prince George's County is that we have underinvested as a state in the public education infrastructure. I'm a proud public school parent. Our three children graduated from Montgomery County Public Schools. We had a wonderful experience. I want to make sure that every child and every parent across the state has that same experience.
But
how do you do that? Well, the blueprint is – what I love about the blueprint is it's very, very granular in what we have to do. We have 42% of teachers are leaving within the first 5 years. That data point, Harold, is a pre-pandemic data point. It's getting worse now. So a big part of what the blueprint is doing is we have to raise teacher pay. We have to raise the pay of our education support professionals. We have to provide more support to them. I've spoken to counselors in the Prince George's County school system who, you know, the ratio of student to counselor is like 1 in 300. You can't possibly serve your students when you are, when you have that kind of ratio. And here's what happened in the budget cycle during this past year. When Larry Hogan first put his budget in for the state of Maryland for the upcoming fiscal year, it was $148 million or thereabouts short in education. And you know the two counties, the two jurisdictions that he shortchanged? It was Prince George's County and Baltimore City. No coincidence. And so Democrats, and I applaud Democrats for doing this, and parents, they advocated. We got the money put back in. So we have to understand that we have a high number of students in Prince George's County who are ESOL students. We have a high number of students, high percentage who are living in poverty, and we need to invest the requisite resources so that we are serving them well. We need to lower class sizes. We need to provide more professional development for our teachers. We need to invest in the physical plants. We need to make sure that we're building and modernizing schools at a greater pace. And the next governor is going to have to be willing to fund that. And that's where there are some differences between the candidates. I'll give you one example. My colleague and friend, Peter Francho, opposes this blueprint that I'm describing. He says we can't afford it. With all due respect to Comptroller Francho, I couldn't disagree more. We can't afford not to do it, because the jurisdictions that have the most economic challenges are the jurisdictions we have to invest the most in. And as your governor, I will fully implement the blueprint. And when we do that, we are going to be able to lower class size. We're going to be able to expand our opportunities to help our educators and our education support professionals. And we're going to be able to make sure that our physical plant in our schools is up to where it needs to be. So it's not 90 degrees in May in a classroom or 30 degrees in January in a classroom. It's happening all too frequently. Okay. We have to pay attention to this. It's a hugely important question, Ann, and there are some real differences between the candidates for governor on this issue. I will fully fund the blueprint.
And thank you so much for your question. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Xavier calling from Silver Spring. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Mr. Perez, I would really like to know, what are your top five goals that you would actually like to basically, where you see there's a deficit in now in Maryland overall, that you would actually like to address? And if it's too much in order to take on all five, give me your top two.
Well, yeah, because it's only an hour show. So, Mr. Right. Perez, I need you to be brief and succinct.
So if you would take the top two, I know that's a broad question. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I want to make sure that everybody has access to jobs, justice, and opportunity. And one of the basic ways you have access to jobs, justice, and opportunity is through investments in education. We've spoken for a long time today, and appropriately so, about the need to invest in our public education. Again, we were number one in the state, our public school system, when Martin O'Malley was governor. We've fallen now to something like 13th. I want to make sure we get back there. That's critically important. I want to make sure that Maryland is a job creation hub, and I think clean energy provides a remarkable opportunity to address both our climate imperatives and our job creation imperatives. I love what Joe Biden says. When I think of climate change, I think of jobs. We can create so tens of thousands of good union middle-class jobs by building out an offshore wind infrastructure, making Maryland an offshore wind capital of the United States. We need to address our healthcare crisis, Xavier, and I already outlined a plan to make Maryland the first state in the country where every person has access to quality, affordable healthcare, health insurance. We have 375,000 uninsured Marylanders. Thank God for Obamacare, because we used to have more than twice that, but we right. still have too many people. 20%, 25% of COVID deaths were a product, Xavier, of the fact that we still have 375,000 uninsured Marylanders. I've already put forth a plan to make sure we address this. And the final issue I want to address, I could address so many more, is transportation. You know, one of the worst things that Governor Hogan did day one was when he canceled the red line up in Baltimore. I want to make sure that here in Maryland we build the red line. We build a regional transit authority in Baltimore. We finish the purple line. We need to make sure that our metro system continues to be effective. The decline in ridership because of the pandemic raises a lot of serious challenges, and I want to make sure that we are continuing to work on that issue. And I want to build a rail down into Charles County as well. And so these transportation issues are opportunities to create jobs and to address so many important needs across our region.
Xavier, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're at the Candidates Corner talking to Tom Perez. He wants the governor's job in the state of Maryland. The Democrat has held numerous positions, both local and national. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. We'll be getting to Jerry and Bruce in a bit. But I have questions. One of the things that we've asked all of our subjects in the Candidates Corner is about a, you know, so-called, you know, black agenda. Do you think it's necessary in Maryland? And if so, what does that look like? What would be the Tom Perez plan to address disparities in the state, be they economic or social or in criminal justice?
Well, all of the above and then some, you know, Harold. You know, we are the wealthiest state in the country as measured by median income. And yet you look at, you know, we have one of the highest incarceration rates of black men in the country. We have all these troubling healthcare disparities, maternal, racial disparities and maternal infant mortality are another example. And you know, I on my website, I have an entire section devoted to the black agenda. And let me outline it very, very fast. You know, we have four HBCUs in Maryland that have always been, you know, anchors and, you know, real agents of equity and excellence. But there was a longstanding lawsuit, and it settled a year or so ago, thanks to the work of so many people. But we need to invest in our four HBCUs, and we have a challenge in our education workforce. Our education workforce is not sufficiently diverse. I want to work with our HBCUs so that we have more black school teachers and more black paraeducators. The healthcare issue I mentioned previously, 25% of our deaths from COVID were a product of the fact that you know, we've got 375,000 uninsured. And they're disproportionately black and brown. And so when we enact the healthcare proposal that I put in place or that I have proposed, we are going to be helping make sure that black families have health insurance. I've talked about we need to do very significant reforms to our minority business enterprise programs. We have not we haven't addressed what the guidelines should be. I think it was 2014 was the last time we had amendments to our MBE goals. That's almost a decade ago. And our MBE program is really, really opaque for a lot of people. It's hard, especially small Black-owned businesses have incredible challenges accessing programs. I want to increase labor union density. And the reason why I want to do that is if you look at the aggregate data, and I've spent a lot of time as labor secretary looking at the aggregate data, wages for unionized Black workers are 14% higher than those for their non-union counterparts. And so when we invest in collective bargaining for state workers, when we invest in organizing, we're helping Black workers across the state. And I invite people to go to my website because I think this question is really, really important. You know, I think housing is one more area I want to get into in terms of the Black agenda. When I led the Civil Rights Division, I sued banks across the country who were transforming the American dream into the American nightmare for Black families. And we need a state government that is going to pay attention to the enforcement of anti-discrimination laws. And we need a state government that is going to provide pathways for Black families to purchase a home. Many can afford the mortgage payment, but they can't afford the down payment. And that's really, really important. And again, there's so much else that we can do. And I would love to spend the entire rest of the hour talking about this, but I would certainly refer you to our Black Agenda, which is on our website at tomperez.com.
Okay. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Bruce, calling from Glen Burnie. Bruce, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you all for taking my call.
Sure.
My question refers to the military, or specifically retired and disabled veterans. There is a lot of us that are moving out of the state and going to places where our dollars go further because they have better benefits for, again, retired and disabled veterans. What is your plan to incentivize veterans to stay in the state of Maryland?
Well, I want everybody to be able to be near their grandchildren, Bruce. And this is one of the questions that has been the most frequently asked question. And the Maryland General Assembly in this most recent session, and it was bipartisan, did enact some legislation to provide tax relief for retirees. And what I want to do is continue that trend. I want to make sure that people who have, you know, given their career in service to our nation can retire with dignity here in Maryland. And so what I want to do is work together with veterans groups, other groups, to figure out how we can exempt certain parts of your income from state taxation. I want to eliminate all the barriers that are causing people to think about leaving the state. And one of those barriers is I want to make sure that we have the best care and treatment for our veterans in the country. Because if you have access to top-flight health care, that's going to keep you in this state. And there is no excuse, given our proximity to the nation's capital, for us to do anything but the best by our veterans. So I appreciate your question. And I very much appreciate your service as well.
Bruce, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jerry, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Jerry. What's on your mind?
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Mr. Perez, I've watched you very carefully for over 20 years. In fact, I've lived in the United States for 20 years now. I've seen you are coming to the governorship with a lot of credentials. Okay, you serve as labor secretary, you are a prosecutor.
Mm. gosh. Jerry,
I'm having trouble hearing Jerry.
Yeah, Jerry, I think we lost you. Call us back. You may be able to hear me, but please call us back. For some reason, we lost you. If you call me back, I promise I will pick up your phone call. Let me ask some of the other questions that we have also asked the candidates this week. Kind of a pet peeve of mine and others who live in, you know, live in the state. What's going on with the grass along state roads? It may seem like a simple thing, but as you know, you don't get a second time to make a first impression. And I've said this all week that along some state roads, it's like elephant grass in Vietnam. Why is the grass so high, and what can be done about that?
Well, I think any state owned land, we need to make sure we keep it up. And your question raises a broader issue of a big role of the next governor is to make sure that state government does the basics. You refer to, you know, cleaning, you know, cutting the grass along state roads. That's an important point. Here's another important point. What happens if, God forbid, we have a recession and people lose their jobs? Well, you know what? During this most recent pandemic, Maryland was 49th out of the 50 states in its responsiveness in getting people their benefits in a timely fashion. Now, I am not blaming the dedicated career professionals because I worked with them in the Great Recession. And when I was Labor Secretary in the Great Recession in Maryland, we got people their benefits in a timely fashion. We were in like the top quarter, the top 30% of states in responsiveness. I bring this up, Harold, because the next governor needs to govern. And one of the undertold stories of Maryland state government during the tenure of Larry Hogan has been the hollowing out of state government agencies. There's just too many agencies that don't have the resources to do their jobs. And the reason in part is because they're leaving for better jobs because we have not taken care of our state workers. We haven't treated them sufficiently well. And we've got to make those investments or else we're going to lose them to the federal government. We're going to lose them to local government where they get better pay and benefits. So one thing I pride myself in is making government work. And that is what I've done in the past. And that's what I will do in the future.
Mm-hmm. You probably heard today that there has been an arrest in the so-called squeegee kid murder, 15-year-old accused of shooting and killing a motorist after that motorist pulled to the side of the road in downtown Baltimore in the harbor area and attacked him with a bat. I'm less interested in your reaction to the crime and more interested in what would you do as governor about the squeegee kid situation? Because while this may be particular to Baltimore today, this trend of these micro entrepreneurs could spread across, you know, across the state. So what would you do about that?
Well, I mean, the issue of the squeegee folks is not a new issue. I mean, I was looking at an article in the Baltimore Sun from, I think, the 90s about this issue. What happened last week was absolutely tragic, preventable. You know, it raises a host of issues. And two of which are we have to work hard, and this gets back, one of the earlier questioners was asking, what are we going to do about, you know, what are we going to do for our youth? You know, part of what we have to do moving forward is make sure opportunities exist for everyone. And that's a huge part of what the next governor needs to do. There's so many people. We're the richest state in the country, Harold, as measured by median income. And yet we have such pockets of abject poverty. And it's not simply in our urban areas. It is our in areas across the state. I recently met with some leaders in Baltimore, and we talked about how we expand opportunity. We also talked about how do we address the issue of guns in Maryland. And we talked about how do we expand community-based violence interruption programs. How do we provide opportunities for young people? How do we make sure that we're helping families? Because so many young people are living in families that have had so much challenge take place. And we have to be honest with ourselves. We have to break the cycle of generational poverty that exists. And as governor, I look forward to sitting down, listening, learning from folks who are working corners right now as squeegee young men, and listening to them. I've walked the streets with people in Baltimore who are in the Safe Streets programs. They're trying to ensure that we reduce violence. I'm so inspired by their commitment. And the main problem, one of the main problems that exists in Baltimore right now, is they don't have a partner in Annapolis. They don't have a governor who truly wants to work with them. They currently have a governor who loves to bash Baltimore. I want to be a governor that's going to partner with Baltimore and understand that our efforts to reduce violence and expand opportunity, that's not just your responsibility, Mayor Scott. That's our collective responsibility, and you are going to have a partner. And I'm not just talking about the city of Baltimore. I'm talking about across the state. Mm-hmm. We need to address these issues, and I think we can.
Let's go to Jerry, calling from Germantown. Jerry, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you so much for accepting my call.
Sure.
Mr. Perez, I see that you are vying for this position with a lot of credentials. You serve as DNC chair, labor secretary, you are a prosecutor. Now, you made a revelation that I was very, very, very shocked about. You indicated that in the state of Maryland, Maryland had the highest incarceration rate, black incarceration is the highest in Maryland. So my question is, what are you going to do to reduce that?
Well, there's a couple things. The thing to understand, Jerry, is that charging decisions when someone is arrested for a crime in Maryland, those charging decisions are made by state's attorneys. And so one thing I want to do is make sure that we are collecting data about charging decisions so that we can understand what is going on. Because the state attorney general is involved in a very, very, very small percentage of criminal prosecutions in Maryland. And so that's what we have to focus on. And I look forward to working with state's attorneys across this state because there's a lot of points in the criminal justice process where prosecutors have discretion. And what we need to do is look at how are they exercising that discretion, because whether is conscious or subconscious bias entering into decisions. I worked on a case when I was the head of the Civil Rights Division in Shelby County, Tennessee. That's metropolitan Memphis. We were able to show that if you took two 15-year-old young adults, one white and one black, and they had the same criminal history, same overall history, and they were charged and they allegedly committed the same crime, that black 15-year-old boy was something like four or five times more likely to be prosecuted as an adult than that similarly situated white young man. That was wrong. That was discrimination. And we completely reformed the juvenile justice system in Shelby County, Tennessee. I think we need to take a very careful look in Maryland, especially with our youngsters, at how discretion is being exercised. because I don't think Shelby County, Tennessee is an aberration. I don't know the data enough in Maryland, but I think this is something we have to pay attention to. And Harold, you asked me a question before about the Black agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the Black agenda needs to include a very, very, very honest and thorough understanding of our criminal justice system and why it is that so many Black people are being charged and potentially being charged in ways that are different than similarly situated white people. We've got to take a look at this. These are really important things because justice is not served if justice is not blind.
Jerry, thank you so much for your phone call. You've got about a minute, Mr. Perez. Tell us about Shannon Snead.
Oh, I love that question. Shannon Snead's a rock star. Shannon Snead's a graduate of University of Maryland Eastern Shore. She's got her graduate degree from Morgan State University. She taught at Coppin. She's an AKA, so if any of Deltas are on listening tonight, I love the Deltas as well as the AKAs, and you're united by service. Shannon was a rock star on the Baltimore City Council. I chose her because we share the same values, and our values of wanting to make sure everyone gets a fair shake are what we are about. And was so honored to have her on the ticket. She has been a great asset. And together, we are going to build a Maryland that works for everyone. And people have said, well, Tom, your ticket, if elected, would be historic. And we both said it almost at the same time. We're not looking to make history as much as we are looking to make a difference. And that's what Shannon's life's been all about, making a difference.
Well, Tom Perez, running for governor for the state of Maryland, I thank you so much for your time, sir. Good luck to you. I'm sure we will be talking to you in the future. We'll be in touch.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful evening.
You too. That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, July 14th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.